This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Patrick here today. I had to think about it a little bit. Guest free today. We have no guests, so 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You will notice if you're watching the live stream, and I need to pull that up myself here. We have the TV now working in the studio, which is nice. Do we have cable on this thing?
I don't know what you're going to watch because it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So you got about 70 channels.
Do you know how much beach volleyball is on these sports channels on the, right now? There is tons of beach volleyball, folks, and poker. We are missing it all. The excitement.
How about some darts? Maybe some billiards?
The cricket league. Yes, cricket. By the way, if the Twins have a day game, don't think for 1 second the entire show is just going to be a picture of me watching the game right behind me. This thing is huge, by the way. This is nice. So, but do we have cable on this, or is it just going to be, will we have breaking news or anything like that on there?
We will, to answer honestly, we'll probably try to figure out exactly what we're going to be doing with that behemoth TV behind you.
Okay. Well, I got an Xbox at home, man. I could be, you know, we could just play some video games. I have no, don't think for 1 second I won't do that. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I got a lot of things we got to get to today, but I want to actually, once again, if I may, I was right. Yesterday, I talked about the story about the inflation in the U.S., Now, and by the way, in case you didn't, there is one bit of breaking news. The actors have now gone on strike. I'll get to that a little bit later on. It doesn't really necessarily affect anything urgently, but I will mention that the Screen Actors Guild has decided to go on strike as well, and that's effective immediately, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Inflation is rapidly cooling across the United States, unless you live in Florida. And we pointed out that it's the best city in the country for inflation was Minneapolis. It's actually below 2%. Now, cost of living increase is generally between 2.5 and 3%. So if your inflation is below 2, you're doing really well. That means cost of living is actually outpacing the cost of inflation, which is good. Minneapolis, St. Paul, the only city in the country that's under 2. It's 1.8. Honolulu is at 2. Florida's god awful. I mean, it's just 7.3. What was it, 9 in Miami? 9%. The Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach area, the inflation rate down there is 9%. So basically, you know, five times as much as it is in Minnesota. It's just god awful. I posted this last night, and I said this is the exact thing how I posted it on Twitter. Minneapolis, St. Paul has the lowest inflation of any major city in the nation. Prepare for Republicans to start screaming, "No, it doesn't!" Reality is very hard on them. Okay, it's just in case. I have had at least six, whether troll accounts or Republicans, come out. It's like, they don't include the cost of housing and food. No, actually, they do. That's called the inflation. that was one of my favorite things. Is like they didn't include this. They have nothing in the story says, well, this is excluded from it. And they just say, well, it's not fair. It's not real. It's not there. Minneapolis is so much worse. The best, though, and this is truly the delusional level that you have to be to try to pull this argument off. And by the way, not the stupidest argument I've gotten today. I'll get to that here in a second. But this is pretty monumentally stupid in the realm of things. The argument was that the higher inflation is much better for you. That basically a 9% inflation rate like Miami. And see, this is just genius. Look how other people that are there, so it costs a lot of money. So see, it's good. Really? You're the same people that went around and vandalized all those gas stations with Joe Biden stickers and said, I did this with gas prices, and was complaining about, why isn't Joe Biden hatching the eggs himself? You know, when the eggs were expensive. Neat trick, by the way, you can pull that off. And now all of a sudden, it's a, inflation, you know, this is, it's not political, Matt, but inflation's really good for you. You guys just, you're so easy to predict because you live in a world where your narrative is absolutes. There is no gray area. There's no middle ground. It's either absolutely fantastic or absolutely worse. And it's gauged on what the political narrative is with that. You know, it's just ludicrous. You guys are just broken people. And, you know, you can't look at this and say, hey, oh my God, you know, that's good. Thank God we got low inflation here in Minnesota. Nope, it's got to be, it would be so much better if inflation was at 25%. It would be so much better. So much better here. Jeez. And by the way, for Florida, let's add on to that inflation, the fact that you can't even get freaking homeowners insurance in Florida now. Most of the homeowners agents down there will not give you homeowners insurance at all. So good luck with the complete rebuild you're going to have to fund out of pocket when the next hurricane hits. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I'm going to get to this, the dumbest thing I've heard said today in just a sec. Okay, I'm going to get to that in a second. But I got to take the long way around, all right, if you don't mind. Starting off with news that the state fair is prepping itself for a variety of different things. Renee Alexander is the CEO over at the state fair. And it sounds like they're already working on their game plan for things, how they're going to work. After the shootings on or near the fairgrounds last year, officials are doubling their security budget compared to 2019, making connections between the fair police and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and federal police agencies as well. We have our own chief and assistant chief, and their whole winter has been spending time setting up relationships and partnerships with Homeland Security, BCA adding additional cameras, doing work around the perimeter. Alexander said, it's just a constant. We are more than doubled our budget on safety and security this year. I will make this argument. If you're stupid enough, I mean, this is like a Dyna. You know, if you're going to pull a crime off in a Dyna or the Mall of America, they're going to know who you are, what car you drove, exactly what direction you went. So try it and think to yourself, just think to yourself how stupid you are when they're kicking in the door of your house to arrest you. Ta-da! You see, it's that simple. So, you know, that's one thing they're doing. Last year, the fair closed early after a gunshot was reported near the mighty Midway. Days later, a man was hospitalized after he was shot near the fairgrounds. So that's one thing. Obviously, there's a question here about dope, because dope will be legal to possess come August 1st. More on that in a second. Although it will become legal in Minnesota to possess and use and grow marijuana starting August 1st, the fair will prohibit smoking cannabis on its grounds. The fair has legal autonomy similar to a municipality and can set parameters within its area. And Alexander said that means no lighting up, at least for now. Well, I don't think you're going to be. I mean, well, first of all, there's always, you've been to the fairgrounds, there's always smoking guy who thinks he's getting away with it because he kind of keeps it down in his hand as he's walking through the fairground. But, you know, it's like, everyone's like, well, who's smoking? And it's like comes up there and he's trying to keep it hidden. You've seen that guy, right, Patrick?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You're a jerk. Okay, just for the record, no one likes you. And you probably need to cut back if you can't go to the fairgrounds for 2-3 hours without knocking back half a pack of heaters. I mean, I'm just going to let you know. It's not 1955, all right? And you're waiting for the horse races at the track. So we don't like that. I don't think most people don't want, even if it's marijuana smoke, want to be, you know, I don't want to go through a smoke cloud, all right? I go to enough concerts that can basically give me a pretty good contact buzz.
You know, and it's pretty nebulous, obviously, as you said, the state fair has autonomy over their grounds, but, you know, there is that state provision that you can't smoke it where a minor might inhale it. Well, there are quite a few kids running around at the fair, too.
Okay, I got to share this. I don't mean to call this guy out. I'm going to guess he was out of towner. I'm over at the Mall of America. Remember I told you I went down there the weekend of 4th of July?
Oh, yeah.
I went down there. So I'm on the west side, coming in from the parking ramp on the west side. You know how there's a smoking area is nowhere near the entrance there?
Yeah, yeah.
Kudos to the guy that was actually over there. He hauled his wife and kids out so that he could have his smokes and made them sit. The Mall of America is sitting right there. He made his family come on out there and smoke, you know, just observe him smoking during his smoke break. Come on, just let him go have fun in the mall, man. You catch up with him later. I mean, I appreciate you doing the smoking zone thing. Absolutely. But why are you hauling your kids over there? Your kids did not look like they were happy.
Oh, why can't we just be in Nickelodeon universe while you take care of this?
Hey, let me tell you about the time I had some Camel Wise. Yeah, it was a good time. no one wants you smoking around them. Or vaping, dude. Yeah, that's not cool either, man. I don't care if it's water vapor. Get your Chinese antifreeze away from me, okay? I don't need that, all right? So I'm with this. I will say this, you don't smoke gummies. Anyway, you can. It depends on how much of the other cannabis you've had, but I mean, no. And I don't believe that what they're saying is right now that you can't have your cannabis gummies out there.
I mean, they do have an incentive to keep people hungry walking through the fair.
Wait a minute here. It's the Minnesota State Fair. How do we know they're not going to have cannabis gummies that are deep fried, wrapped in bacon, served with ranch dipping sauce?
I think I'm going to be requesting a couple weeks off and applying for a new vendorship next year.
How long of a nap would you take after that? They're just going to have a hammock set up around the, just roll you into a hammock. We'll come back and pick you up in about 6-7 hours, all right?
I might replace the Thanksgiving afternoon nap with a new...
We'll poke you awake on Labor Day, okay? There you go. You got to go back home now. Oh, don't think that they're not thinking about it. Don't think they're not thinking about it. Smoking of marijuana is still not allowed in public. It is still prohibited in public. We will follow those guidelines just like other public places as well. We're not moving forward with any type of sales or anything at this point as it relates to marijuana. We'll give it some time. So there's not going to be the dope booth at the fairgrounds. Although that would be dope. State Fair Board could rule changes that allow for marijuana use and consumption at the fair. Alexander said, with limited infrastructure and enforcement, so it won't be allowed until 2023. I mean, okay, that's smoking. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. We've had legal gummies for a year. You're crazy if you didn't think that some people were in that fairgrounds with the cannabis gummies. And what can you do when someone has a cannabis gummy, gets out of their car, and goes into the fairgrounds? It's not like they've, you know, technically broken any laws. You can't smoke it in public. What are you chewing there? Spit it out. Spit it out now. I don't think that's going to work. A little more than a month before the fair gates open, there are basically 5 concerts that are on track to sell out, and I am not surprised. Well, I Brandi Carlile, I know Brit was a very loyal fan base. Doesn't, I guess, to a point that doesn't surprise me, but the other ones, not a shock at all. The Chicks always do. They get good crowds. Keith Urban, of course, Keith Urban at the State Fair. Come on, that's going to sell out. I'm surprised it's not already sold out. Duran Duran. How about that? I just was listening to the Smartless podcast with Simon LeBon and those guys. Very entertaining there, podcast that I occasionally pick up there. And Simon LeBon, Duran Duran. Absolutely. And of course, the Jonas Brothers. Jonas Brothers are going to sell out, aren't they? You know, I'm pretty sure they're going to sell out. They're currently pacing to sell out their shows, though. So they're not sold out yet. So you can still get tickets, I think, to the Chicks, Keith Urban, Brandi Carlile, Duran Duran, and Jonas Brothers. They've had some big shows there that end up getting really big turnouts. I remember the year we were broadcasting out there, and I got Rush. That Rush played their Time Machine tour at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. And it was actually the second time they played the fairgrounds. They played the fairgrounds, one of the secondary stages, and I don't think it was called the Liney stage or anything like that at that point. But they played the secondary stage. It was one of their first U.S. tours, so they probably had like 7 songs total. And they played the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. And, yeah, that was it was a good time. So, yeah, I wasn't there. I mean, it was like, what, five, four. Might have had a gummy. I don't know. I mean, it's there, though. So there you go, an update in there. And mainly I wanted to bring up the dope thing. You'll understand where I'm going here when I get to the stupidest thing I've heard today. And trust me, this is a freaking doozy. We're going to get to that here in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll talk more dope when we do come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. God, imagine yes. Yes at the State Fair. Dear Lord. That'd be amazing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. No, I'm just saying. I just heard. Yeah, never mind. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So, State Fair has got some rules. You're not going to be able to smoke dope at the state fairgrounds, even though it's going to be legal in the state to own and possess and smoke it. You can't smoke it there at the fairgrounds. Just be advised. And we already know jerkish smoking guy is going to try to do it because, you know, that's how I roll. You're an idiot and no one likes you. That being said, congratulations to the Red Lake Nation. Big salute to you guys. I hope you guys make a freaking mint off this. Absolutely. The Red Lake Nation's Tribal Council voted on Tuesday to legalize recreational marijuana and begin selling it in both tribal and non-tribal members on August 1st. Oh, yeah. Let's get your Red Lake on, folks. I'm having a feeling that their tourism is about to spike in the Red Lake region. The move could make Red Lake Nation the first entity to operate a recreational dispensary in the state and gives the tribe a significant head start on the green rush to claim a piece of the projected $1.5 billion market. While possessing recreational marijuana will become legal across Minnesota on August 1st, retail locations aren't expected to open for another 12 to 18 months because state officials must first establish a dispensary licensing system. The Red Lake Nation is well-positioned to launch a tribal-run cannabis dispensary. The tribe already cultivates and dispenses medicinal marijuana on the reservation, having legalized medicinal marijuana through referendum in 2020. The tribe's medicinal marijuana dispensary, Native Care, will all begin selling recreational marijuana, said Sam Strong, the Red Lake Nation's tribal secretary. Minnesotans older than 21 will be able to purchase cannabis at the store in limited amounts. Now, it's interesting. I've always been kind of interested in how there are some things where the tribal, when you're on reservation land and the tribal rules, they apply. I mean, in Wisconsin, you wonder where people are getting some of those heavy duty fireworks, not like the stuff that they're, you know, that they're trying to terrify people with kids in Minneapolis. But we're talking like heavy duty, like wow, these are like pro grade fireworks. You get those, the Native American reservations, they will sell you the heavy duty ordnance. And you can go get that over there. And it's completely legal because they're the reservations. They can do that. I'm not sure exactly how they can. Because part of me does wonder, it's like, could the Native American tribes have legalized marijuana on the tribal lands at any point? I mean, it would seem to me, I mean, they have sovereignty, or they're supposed to, you people that still don't seem to understand treaties. They're supposed to have sovereignty, be able to determine that.
It's probably a question of federal law because it's still illegal at the federal level, even though some states have legalized it.
Last time, I will say this. I mean, and I'm not saying you're wrong in any way, but the tribal treaties are supposed to supersede the Constitution, which then is, you know, they can regulate themselves. Anyway, it's irrelevant here in Minnesota because come August 1st, it's legal everywhere, and the Red Lake Nation is, you know, leading the way. Although Red Lake has an advantage in opening the first dispensary, it won't be convenient for most Minnesota consumers. The Red Lake Reservation is located more than 30 minutes from Bemidji, around 3 hours from Moorhead and Duluth, and 4 hours from the Twin Cities. Red Lake could also open dispensary 4 hours. No, it's going to be closer to about five. Red Lake could also open dispensaries on tribal land near Thiefer Falls and Warred. Yeah, get ready for that winter fishing season. Strong said that legalizing marijuana will help the tribe in its fight against opiate epidemic and that its share of revenue will fund substance abuse prevention. Now, I want to repeat this line, okay? Strong said legalizing marijuana will help the tribe in its fight against the opiate epidemic and that a share of the revenue will fund substance abuse prevention. We will see this as a resource not only to reduce harm, but also to bring resources to help our people recover, Strong said. Some research has shown legalizing cannabis corresponds with fewer opiate overdoses and deaths, although the evidence is somewhat mixed. The Red Lake and other tribes will also be able to operate dispensaries off reservations through compacts negotiated with the administration of Governor Tim Walz. Strong said the medicinal marijuana the tribe currently cultivates and dispenses meets high-quality standards and is free from harmful contaminants. Strong said the tribe will release more details for cannabis consumers before the end of the month. Despite recreational marijuana becoming legal on the reservation, alcohol remains prohibited within the border of the Red Lake Reservation. So, and then that's actually a good point. Don't stop by a liquor store and then drive on the reservation to go get your marijuana. Go get your marijuana first and then go out the reservation and go get your liquor because that will be the legal way to do it. Ta-da! See? Big salute. You know, and already I've heard from a few members of the Red Lake Nation who have said, you know what? No, this is great. We're really happy. We're hoping that this actually brings in some revenue. And my guess is going to be once we start hearing about, if we do hear about the money that's generated here, if we hear about the receipts, that you're going to have a lot of towns like, oh, maybe we should get ours open pretty quick. I'm going to, if you're in a border city, East Grand Forks, Moorhead, Pipestone, Sandstone, I believe, is on the border down there on the southwest side. Anything on the south, Albert Lea, anything on the southern border, anything in Wisconsin, Minneapolis. I gotta believe there's going to be like an instantaneous demand from these states where they're really, really, really uptight and their residents need to relax. And yeah, by all means, Duluth. Is it going to be, like I said, is it going to be like fireworks in Wisconsin when you cross the border and you have all the like, phantom fireworks ahead? Woo-hoo-hoo. Is it going to be like, Donnie Dopes ahead, you know, that sort of thing?
It'll be kind of nice after the fireworks and the Sunday liquor that we're going to have people coming here instead of us going there for once.
God, you reminded me of the Sunday liquor. One of the funniest stories is the woman who apparently for her young child, had to make an orange liqueur cake for her young child's birthday. And apparently, because she was surprised her young child's birthday popped up again, you know, was having to drive to Wisconsin to get orange liqueur for a young child's birthday cake. Little Billy's sleeping off his birthday over there pretty hard, man. Sorry. That was one of the better ones.
Well, now she can make Little Billy the brownie cake.
Oh, yeah, I could make the brownies. Billy's got his orange liqueur cake and he's got some dope brownies, man. Billy, happy birthday. Happy freaking birthday, Billy.
I want to go to this birthday party.
All of a sudden, half the musicians in town show up for your 8-year-old's birthday party. I was like, I didn't know you guys were like him or knew him. I mean, he must be on Facebook or something. All right. So you've heard that. Now you've heard the state fair side of things. Now you've heard me talk about the Red Lake Nation. When we do return, I am going to present one of the dumber things I have seen said, period. Someone, a Republican, I know, saying something completely pulled out of his caboose in an attempt to try to make it sound like he's intelligent about something. Unbelievable. I'll get to that here in just a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I post the story about the Red Lake Nation saying we're starting to sell marijuana legally August 1st. Bravo. And I hope you guys make a ton of money. I really do. Just for the record here, I have muted a lot of politicians. I don't block politicians completely, but I mute them And the reason why is there's a lot of Republican politicians today who want to be internet trolls. And I've talked about this a lot. They don't want to be politicians. They don't want to be a representative or a senator. They want to be an internet troll. And they don't care about their constituents. All they can care about is the 60 or so regular troll followers they have that think that they're kind of a troll king or a troll queen. And basically that they're trying to say, did you see that zinger I said? I got a zinger out. And the reality is, because they're too stupid to realize what I'm about to say, I have to help them out. It is beneath you as an elected official to get into a petty little online spat with me, a radio host. Unless I've said something about your family or your kids or something like that, that is so beneath you. Because you're supposed to be an elected official. So going up online and scouring who you can go after next, that's lame and sad. It really is. And frankly, I think most of the time when you see people like this, it's either there's something wrong with them upstairs or there's liquor or something. What are you doing? I am a radio host. I am paid to do what I do. I basically share opinions. People like me. I know. But you as an elected official are supposed to be there to about writing laws for the state, making life better for your constituents, even though we are supposedly, you know, we disagree with how that's going to happen. That's what your goal should be. It shouldn't be like, I'm going to defend the January 6th people. I don't want to embarrass you. I don't want to make a story about myself. So I just mute you because, frankly, I'm better than you. And that's the sad. I don't generally say that. But I'm for your own well-being, I'm not talking to you because I could spank you into next month with your weak-ass talking points. Case in point. I posted this story up, and I get this all of a sudden, this response from a Devin, Dark Horse 1382, who just the tweet is source question mark like this. And I go to look at this tweet, and I realize he's responding to a Republican. The Republican, former Representative Matt Dean. Now, I'm not going to have Matt Dean on the air. I don't want to talk with him. He is clearly not worth my time. You'll understand that here in a second. Matt Dean, he was the former majority leader for the Minnesota House of Representatives from 2011 to 2013, having been selected by his caucus for the position. So he's the former House Majority Leader, Speaker of the House, or excuse me, the House Majority Leader. He, as well, engaged, and this is at least from his Wikipedia page. In May of 2011, author Neil Gaiman, yes, that Neil Gaiman, fantastic writer, one of the best. Love him, big fan, follow him on all social medias. I highly encourage you to do so as well. Neil Gaiman kicks ass, and that's just that. And if someone could let him know I just said that, I'd be very grateful because he's awesome. Anyway, Neil Gaiman was invited to speak at the Stillwater Library in Minnesota. Gaiman has a fixed policy of charging very high speaking fees for his appearances, believing that such fees will discourage most people from requesting he speak, leaving him more time for writing. I gotta admit, the guy's cool, man. Gaiman's fee was taken from a special fund established to bring authors in to speak for local libraries. Dean took issue with the expenditure, saying that Gaiman was an author he hated. That tells me everything about you, Dean. And described him as a pencil-necked little weasel who stole $45,000 in the state of Minnesota. The actual fee was $40,000, and Gaiman had pointed out that he'd already donated his speaking fee to the charity long before Dean's comments. After some press coverage, his mother and his mother's urging, Mom, Dean apologized for being a name caller. You see, my mom doesn't interfere with my life, you freaking idiot. It's the little things. Pardon me, I get a little sip of tea here. It's the little things. Delicious. All right. So, that Matt Dean. He apparently had seen my Red Lake Nation going to be sell recreation marijuana? And he made, I unmuted him just to see this post. You ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? From Rep. Matt Dean. That's heartbreaking. Now, this is him referring to the Red Lake Nation's decision to serve, to sell marijuana. That's heartbreaking. Not a single instance where introducing pot into a town has not also seen increased fentanyl deaths. The last thing Red Lake needs is more drugs. Save yourself the Lane lecture about how pot is safer than heroin. What? Public policy around legalizing drugs gives us more, gives more deaths. Wow. That is a steaming pile of Twitter right there. That is, yeah, that is that. Now, first of all, Matt, I don't know when you thought you became an authority on Native American issues, but I'm not an authority on Native American issues, but I can tell you, you probably should shut up, okay? And the last thing Red Lake needs is more drugs. Come on, dude. Come on. That's not some sort of Christian plea. That's kind of a backhanded slap, and you know it. At least that's how I'm taking it. Is that how you know, Patrick, if you heard that, that's kind of how you're hearing it too, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking this guy really could not give two bleeps about Native American sovereignty or Native issues.
Exactly. Also, it gives us a great idea that if you elect Republicans, there's a lot of them that want to make marijuana illegal. And so this is, I think, the reason why, and I don't know Matt Dean's motivations here, but I know there are some Republicans that don't want the sales to start because they don't want people to find out how much money people are going to start making from legalized marijuana sales. They don't. And so, at least as taking, you know, this mentality, the tweet, the tone of the tweet is one that comes across as, we're going to have this is a bad thing. This should never have been legalized. But let's get into some of the other things that he said here. Not a single incident where introducing pot into a town has not also seen increased fentanyl deaths. The last thing Red Lake needs now is more drugs. Save yourself the Lane lecture about how pot is safer than heroin. I guess I'll start with the last one. What? Wait a second. You don't think there's a difference between pot and heroin? I'll tell you what. Representative Matt Dean, I want you to put your money where your mouth is, and you can show it. I will let you smoke a joint, and then I'll let you shoot up with some heroin, and you can come back to us and tell us, was it the same experience? Because I'm going to guess if you did that, you'd come back and say, oh, those are really different. Yeah, they are. Heroin. Save yourself the Lane lecture about how pot is safer than heroin. What? Dude, you know how many states have legalized marijuana before we did? And no, it's not the same thing as heroin. You guys on the right, stop talking about drugs. You don't know a damn thing about them, man. It was the guy that wanted a 2-pound joint. Oh, man, that is going to be one huge joint, man. That's Cheech and Chong level joint. God, it just... No, pot is safer than heroin. Now, I'll also point out once again, the last thing Red Lake is needed is more drugs. Once again, Matt Dean claiming to be an authority on Red Lake Nation issues. Yeah, I'll let your eye rolls go there. But let's go back to the first one here that I brought up. Not a single instance where introducing pot into a town has not also seen increased fentanyl deaths. So that when the Devin said source, that's what he was referring to. What was the source? And so I had some time this morning after he posted this. So I typed in, legalized marijuana rate of fentanyl deaths as well. Now, I'm going to actually criticize the Minnesota Reformer story, because outside of clearly biased mentality, like organizations where all drugs are bad, well, except for liquor, in which, okay, you know, you guys got to figure out your tone there, because trust me, you know, every day in this country, we have tons of deaths caused by liquor. So, you know, and that's a drug. But needless to say that there's these people, there are these organizations who are like, you know, pot is worse than crack cocaine. And you're like, okay, no, that's not it. Now, but once again, those are people that are putting out fairly irrational studies. On the page I pulled up, so I typed in that term, hit search, boom. On the page I pulled up, this is the first one I pulled up. This was from BMJ, and just who young. I'm gonna pull up BMJ. Who we are? BMJ started out 180 years ago as a medical journal, publishing articles. As well, now we values-driven company, a global brand. We work towards vision of a healthier world. So BMJ has done their own study here on this. Access to legal cannabis stores associated with a reduction in opiate-related deaths in the United States, partially those linked to synthetic opiates such as fentanyl, finds a study published by BMJ today. Okay, this is... So Matt Dean's research did not exist. This was the first story that came on up. And in the first paragraph of the first story, access to legal cannabis stores is associated with a reduction in opiate-related deaths in the United States, particularly those linked to synthetic opiates such as fentanyl. Says a study, opiates are morphine-type drugs that relieve short-term acute pain and pain in the end of life. There's little evidence that they are helpful for long-term chronic pain, but they are often prescribed for this reason. Needless to say, their study, and if you read the study here, which I did, after controlling the population characteristics for potentially influential factors, the research found that counties with higher numbers of active cannabis dispensaries were associated with reduced opiate-related mortality rates. According to the estimate, the increase from 1 to 2 dispensaries in a county was associated with an estimated 17% reduction in all opiate-related mortality rates, and that does include fentanyl. So, once again, here is, you know, Matt Dean saying not a single incidence where introducing pot into a town has not also seen increased fentanyl deaths. There's your first strike against you, Matt. No, that's not the case, at least from this BMJ study. But I have also learned to do my due diligence and pull up more than one study, to which I did. This is from the BCCSU. From the journal there, the Drug and Alcohol Dependence, cannabis use is associated with reduced risk of exposure to fentanyl among people in opiate therapy during community-wide overdose crises. So basically, this one has basically shown that cannabis use actually does cause fewer problems with fentanyl. This is the exact thing. And once again, this is a fairly extensive study that goes into a lot of different details here. It's chatty. So, but they bring the numbers and they got the stats. By the way, if you want to look at these, I linked to this. Just go to the Red Lake story I posted on social media, all the social media accounts, the Twitter account, I posted that story on all the accounts, but this one is on the Twitter account where Matt Dean decided he was going to be Johnny Genius here. So then, okay, so I said to myself, all right, that's two strikes. Both those two separate reports done with two separate groups of researchers, both saying that fentanyl use and fentanyl deaths decrease with legalized cannabis. Let's go to a third one. Why not? Cal Poly. Now, this one looks like it's Ian Donovan. This is from spring of 2020. This is what looks like a thesis paper on for his master's or something like that. It's fairly well written, actually. While early research shows that access to medical cannabis can reduce opiate-related deaths, few researchers have examined if accessibility to recreational cannabis has a similar effect. So basically, they're saying that they've proven that medical cannabis reduces opiate-related deaths, but we haven't had enough research on recreational cannabis. The result of this paper suggests that the states with recreational cannabis laws are expected to see a reduction of 4 to 5 opiate deaths per 100,000 3 years after the law went into effect compared with 1 year before the law was in effect. Let me repeat that. This is once again, and once again, another very well done research paper, which Matt Dean clearly has not read. The result of this paper suggests that states with a recreational cannabis law are expected to see a reduction of 4 to 5 opiate deaths per 100,000 3 years after the law went into effect compared to 1 year before the law went into effect. That's from Cal Poly. Guess he's going to be kind of smart. So the only thing that Matt Dean said that's true is that's heartbreaking. But what's heartbreaking is not anything else he said, is that this was an elected official and he literally tried to pull his stats out of his caboose and present them as reality. Not a single instance where introducing pot into a town has not also seen an increased fentanyl deaths. That's just made freaking up. Because I just read 3 reports. That was on the first, there was like the first 4 or 5 entries on the first page when I pulled up the Google search, which he didn't even do. This guy was a majority leader in the Minnesota House. He hasn't even done basic research on this. And he should probably shut up about being an authority on anything with the Red Lake Nation. And he thinks marijuana is somehow equal to heroin, or at least implies it. Save yourself the lame lecture about how pot is safer than heroin. Pot's a lot safer than heroin. And legalized recreational marijuana, everything points to it actually decreasing the deaths from opiates, including chemically created ones such as fentanyl. It's rare you see someone so brazenly stupid. Someone who clearly has no knowledge of a subject, but it doesn't stop them from trying to talk authoritatively about a subject. That is your Minnesota Republican Party today in a freaking nutshell. You're right. That's heartbreaking. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. And once again, I want to run through this here because not a single instance where introducing pot into a town has not also seen an increased fentanyl deaths. I just went through 3 studies that said that actually is not true, that fentanyl deaths actually decreased with legalized recreational marijuana. So, and by the way, the person that asked source ! Devin, I don't see any response to him on his source for this. So, the last thing Red Lake needs is more drugs. Once again, that is more about, I don't think you should be talking about the Red Lake Nation. I think that's pretty insulting. Frankly, save yourself the Lane lecture about how pot is safer than heroin. How am I supposed to not take that as you're implying that pot is as dangerous as heroin, which is just stupid. It's not. I mean, I've got multiple friends who have smoked pot for years, decades. Never once have they all said, I'm on the crack cocaine now. Gateway drug. No. Not once. And for the record, I don't smoke dope, man. I'm not going to smoke this. I spent last year, remember in October of last year, late September of last year, I went out to Colorado, and I hadn't been in Colorado for a while. So I wanted to look around a little bit about the legalized marijuana sales out there. I got a chance to talk to some of the locals. I was up in Estes Park, which is a bit of a high-end community right outside of Rocky Mountain National. And everyone seemed to be completely fine with it. No problems. Nothing that really seemed to be a big problem. I don't know where you're getting the idea that you can just say these things without anything, any evidence to back you up. Someone has to call you out. And no, is the whole point of you to say, well, I got Matt McNeil, dude, man, I've embarrassed you. Okay. This is why I mute you guys. Because I've embarrassed you. You've said some things which are ludicrous on the nature. I've pointed out you didn't really do much research on your claim. I've pointed out that, you know, if you think that pot and heroin are the same, you know, are safer or equal danger, then I don't know. And I also point out public policy around legalizing drugs gives more deaths. Clearly, your implication is you're against marijuana. And I've said this from the beginning when we started this discussion in this state about legalizing marijuana. If you are against legalized marijuana because you want people safer, then the next words out of your mouth are, and we should make alcohol illegal too, because alcohol is far more dangerous than marijuana. I can tell you that, attending to that myself with my broken back caused by an alleged drunk driver. I just, the Republican Party is a hollow shell of its former self. I remember myself voting for Republicans occasionally. I wouldn't even think of voting for a Republican today. All they do is they're taking away your rights. And they, I don't know. This whole thing seems like it, this whole tweet seems like it was written to seem like he's smart and clever and intelligent, but just under the most flimsy of review, it comes down in tatters. But this is where they're at today. Once again, I condemn the Red Lake Nation. You take advantage of these laws. You go out there, and I hope you guys make a mint up there. You deserve it. The rest of the state, I imagine you're going to be getting on board too. But reminder, if you vote Republican, there seems to be a lot of Republicans that want to make it illegal again. Hour two, that's coming up next. Hour number two of the show on your Thursday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick here, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I wanted to go back to something I mentioned at the very beginning of the show and something mentioned in the news now. Our actors are now on strike. Now, it'll be interesting to see where that goes, because I just mentioned in the last thing, I was listening to Smartless, and they did the Simon Le Bon from Duran Duran, and the Duran Duran's coming to the State Fair. I wonder if they'll be doing their podcast, or is everything shut down? Maybe that is. We'll have to see. The Screen Actors Guild, the union representing tens of thousands of Hollywood performers, voted on Thursday to go on strike after negotiations with film and TV studios fell apart. The guild, known as SAG-AFTRA, had agreed to extend talks with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers 2 weeks past their contract expiration date on June 30th, but the two sides failed to reach an agreement in that time. Even after federal mediators joined discussions and the union's negotiating committee unanimously recommended a strike to its national board early Thursday, the national board agreed hours later. Fran Drescher, yes, that Fran Drescher, who is the president of SAG-AFTRA and the iconic star from the 1990s sitcom The Nanny, called the studio's attitudes at the bargaining table insulting and disrespectful to our massive contributions to this industry. The companies have refused to meaningfully engage in some topics and others completely stonewalled us, Drescher said in a statement. Until they do negotiate in good faith, we cannot begin to reach a deal. The strike will effectively grind Hollywood to a halt, at least temporarily. On Monday, SAG-AFTRA leadership assembled around 140 top publicists for a conference call to embrace them for what has been seen as a likely strike. According to Variety, one person described the vibes as panic. The stars of summer blockbusters like Oppenheimer, Barbie, and the new Mission Impossible installation would be pulled from red carpets and press junkets, the rap reported. So, yeah, didn't the Mission Impossible just open up on Wednesday? So they've kind of got theirs out of the way. But, yeah, that's kind of it for them. The trade group AMPTP represents major studios, including Disney, Netflix, Paramount, Sony, Universal, and Warner Brothers. Some 160,000 performers are part of SAG-AFTRA, including big Hollywood names, making entry into the cardholders club a major stepping stone for aspiring stars. Commentary from the studio executives this week appears to have only tangled the path of agreements for the unions. One executive bluntly told Deadline that the studio's goal was to break the WGA by refusing to negotiate in good faith for several months. The end game is to allow things to drag on until union members start losing their apartments and losing their homes, an executive told Deadline, which noted other top bosses feel the same. So this is where we're at. Now, a few different things I want to talk about here. The problem we have in America right now, I think overall, is that executives of every branch feel as if they are owed the not the biggest slice of pie, two-thirds of the pie, three-quarters of the pie, that's theirs. The rest of everyone else can get, you know, they can split that little bit. But do not fool yourself. It's not just inflation. It's not just the cost of living. Starting in the 1980s, executives of all industries started convincing themselves that the most important thing at the company was not the customers, was not the employees, was not the shareholders, was not the money that was bankrolling them. It wasn't even their suppliers. It was themselves, the executives, the golden class. And we've talked about how in 2008, when W was getting ready to leave office, after the economy collapsed, his treasury secretary came out with the insane, give me billions of dollars of money. You can't ask where it goes and ever ask for a receipt. Well, we found out later what that was Operation Save Christmas Bonus, where he was basically just trying to get a massive haul of money to give to executives. Now, think about the level of power that you're exerting here. Executives convinced the Treasury Secretary to basically run into the Treasury Department, grab handfuls of cash, take it out, and throw it at the banking executives who were responsible for the entire economic collapse of 2008 because of greed, not because they were good and successful, but because that whiny executive class had said, we deserve our Christmas bonuses, even though we destroyed the company. So we need the federal government to go put some cash and give us our Christmas bonuses. Thank you very much. And people actually were going to go along with this. Now, I should mention, even a lot of Republicans were like, oh, hell to the no. We're not doing that. And that kind of came back. But these executives at the entertainment industry, let's just be very clear, they have been belligerent beyond belligerent. And they're making 30, 40, 60. Well, someone was talking about the guy, the head that runs Disney, makes 27 million. I could be wrong on that number. 27 million, gets bonuses that almost equal another 27 billion. Plus, he gets stock options and he can sell those off kind of, you know, in certain quantities. He is making tens of millions of dollars a year. And don't get me wrong, it's a very tough job. It's a very tough job. You're doing better than Louis Arise is. Louis Arise is having a really great year and he's not getting paid that much money. Okay. Let's just be honest with you. Elemental is not a big hit, Disney. I mean, that's a Byron Buxton strikeout right there. I'm just going to let you know. Secret Invasion, I've been watching that. That's actually quite entertaining. But, you know, it's hits and misses. But heaven forbid you even say to them, well, maybe you should cut your salaries. They're so incensed by the mere suggestion of that because, once again, starting in the 1980s, one of the biggest problems we had in this country is the executive class placed themselves ahead of everyone else. And they've got an incredible amount of power and they've got three quarters of the pie. So much so that they basically described good old-fashioned greed as inflation. I mean, when the gas prices went up, that wasn't Joe Biden. That was the gas companies. And when egg prices went up, that wasn't Joe Biden. That was the egg companies who, you know, they'd sit there and say inflation and then come out the next day and say, oh, by the way, our corporate profits were the best we ever had. Well, that's not inflation. That's just you being greedy jackasses and taking all the money. And what that was a lot of it was the COVID money, the COVID relief money going out to the people. That was executives saying, how dare you give those people my money? And so they went up and jacked up all the prices until they sucked every dollar of COVID relief money out of everyone's bank accounts and seen. So that is, you know, we want to make sure we understand this. This is part of the problem that we have here is that the executives, just no one has the guts to look at them and say, well, maybe you should take a pay cut because you're not exactly going to be, you know, living check to check if you get $15 million a year as opposed to $22 million a year. As a matter of fact, you're still going to lead a really comfortable life. You're still going to probably have the company pay for everything in your life. I mean, that's, you know, their house is paid for, their cars are paid for, their kids' private schools are paid for, their kids' college are paid for, all their medical, gold-plated medical, gold-plated medical. They don't pay a dime for glasses, dental, any of that stuff. They probably have a vacation home that the company pays for. They basically, all their heat, electricity, rent, gas, cable, phones, paid for. And on top of that, give them $15 million, or $22, $23, $24 million a year. Not exactly living check to check, how we put it that way. So that is pretty much the problem. And they look at the writers and they look at the actors as not very important. It doesn't, I mean, if before an actor goes on out there and puts on their striking clothes and goes out there with their photo team and looks like, I'm here with the rest of the fellas and we're walking the line. Just do me a favor. Save your time, save your money, get some of that money set aside for the lesser actors and basically help pay for their rent, bills, all that stuff. Or God forbid, if I can be bold enough, you have a few actors who are wealthy enough to rent out hotels, rent out a hotel. And if you've got actors who are basically being evicted, get that as an option for them. I don't mean to, you know, I imagine you have your own ideas, but you got to be prepared because these guys, while they're stashing all their money and preventing anyone from getting a dime of that, because how dare you? They're more than willing to hurt their working class that basically make their product for them, that make them their money. Because, yeah, jackasses. The other side of this, if I can, is there is this growing mentality within the entertainment world that you could put out a completely AI-generated product, that the script is generated by artificial intelligence, that the actors and the acting and the performance is generated by artificial intelligence, and that people will watch it. Now, I know there are some people out there who are saying, oh, no, Matt, we wouldn't do that. Oh, gosh, imagine that would be horrible. Yeah, it would be. It would be. But you'd watch it. And I'm going to bring it up for this reason, under this guise. Starting in the 80s, I mean, my God, I mean, I grew up in a generation where War Games and Terminator and stuff told you, do not trust artificial intelligence because we don't know how it's going to work. And of course, no one freaking listened to that. And we've had cases and stories in the last few years where people have created artificial intelligence algorithms and they have put them to work. And just to see what they create and they come up with, and they're coming up with stuff that was never programmed into their original material, and they don't quite understand how that's even possible, which is a massive red flag that you would think that someone would run over to the plug on the computer and unplug the damn thing and then pour gasoline on the hard drive and burn it down. But no, they keep saying, well, maybe they won't launch the nuclear missiles. And that's kind of, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if for some reason, if this thing becomes sentient, it's not going to be nearly as you know, cutesy as you guys think it's going to be. And we have technology companies who are actively trying to make sentient AI. That is completely off. That we've plugged in the internet. We've plugged in all the conversations in every book, and we're going to let it go. It's terrifying. It's terrifying because we don't know where it's going to go. And we had people warning about this forever. And it's funny because all of a sudden, about 3 years ago, people said, hey, you can make an AI, you can type in this thing into AI and it will make Cher as a pumpkin. Isn't this the greatest? I'm like, no, but what AI learned, or the people that are running AI learned, is that people who might have been somewhat hesitant towards AI being given free rein were now fine with AI as long as they were able to help them make cutesy little memes for their social media accounts. And this is how we all die. And this is how we all get wiped out. You know, it's so cool. I was able to make a meme where the Jonas Brothers were bunnies, and little did I know the company was about to kill, you know, send all the nukes to kill us all. I don't blame the artists and the writers. There's already tons of things out there. I mean, I believe I brought up the term Secret Invasion, which is the latest Marvel series that's run on Disney, and the opening credits were all generated by AI. And I don't know if that was because the writers had gone on strike at that point, or if it was just that was, you know, the kind of, there are some people who are saying they did that because of the nature of the show, where, you know, basically people are disguised as other people. You don't know what it is, that sort of thing. But I'm a little concerned, and I'm with the actors and I'm with the writers here, because the reality is you've got people who are only concerned about money. And trust me, if they could automate the entire entertainment industry to where all they had to do was type in, create a late night TV show host, and here are the guests they're going to have, and can you create a band that looks like this, and create some funny little skits, and all of it is generated and is in front of a fake TV audience, and we'll go with it, we'll air that. They would think if they could pull that off, they would do that in a heartbeat. I think they would do that in a heartbeat. 952-946-6205. Stan is in Chanhassen. Let's go there. Welcome on in, Stan.
Hey, a bit of off topic here on the artificial intelligence thing, but I don't know if you've ever seen a movie from the 70s called The Forbin Project.
I've heard of that. What can you describe it a little bit? It sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's not exactly artificial intelligence. The premise is that the U.S. and the Soviet Union decide to lock up older nuclear missiles and only give computers access to the launch information so that humans can't ever go to nuclear war. And the computer, called Colossus, ironically, decides, it doesn't get sentient, but what it basically decides is that it can run the world better, and if they don't comply, it just, you know, periodically uses a nuclear missile to remind them that it's in charge.
Yeah.
So, ironically, or coincidentally, Ron Howard was looking at doing a remake of the film, 10 years ago, because it's pretty dated by now, obviously, from the 70s. But and he wanted Will Smith to play the lead scientist, the guy who creates Colossus.
Yeah.
In the original movie, it was Eric Braeden, who was more famous for Young and the Restless, if that means anything.
Okay. Stan, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. No, I will have to go catch that. That sounds interesting. I remember, as a kid, and okay, you know, I'm a geek. I love Doctor Who, and I've always been a fan. I've shared the story is that even before PBS was airing that stuff on Friday night, I was in one of the four markets that syndicated the Tom Baker Fourth Doctor Who stories. And I came home, and while my friends were watching, you know, Brady Bunch and Hogan's Heroes and Gilligan's Island, I was watching Doctor Who, and I'm like, what is this? This is the best thing I've ever seen. You know, kind of mid-run for Tom Baker, the Fourth Doctor, was a series called Robots of Death, where, yeah, this is 6 years before The Terminator. Still scares me. I will still watch that movie, that episode, and the idea of the robots taking over still scares the living daylights out of me. That was in the 70s in Britain. Back then, they hadn't figured out the AI to fix their teeth. Sorry, England. No, you look great now. Very nice. But back then, it's funny. You know, hey, this is a bad idea. This is a bad idea. This is a bad idea. Wait a second. Let's do this. Well, didn't we say it's a bad idea? Yeah, but what we can do is you can make a picture of Byron Buxton as a head of celery. Oh, it's an AI. I love it. I've made a meme and the world's going to end. Mark my words, I don't think we are that far away from a TV show that is completely written and acted by AI. And when that does happen, all I'm going to say is don't watch it, because if you do, that's only going to encourage them. But at the same time, I said that years ago with the plethora of reality TV shows, and well, now we have half the networks have dumped their whatever they were going to be, History or Bravo or the Weather Channel, and they're all now airing reality shows. So maybe that's just where we're going to go. 952-946-6205. I've got a speculation ahead that I think is because of a news story from Susan Due, our good friend Susan Due, who's now at the Star Tribune. I am very concerned about this Minneapolis Police Department and the human rights groups agreement, because I almost kind of wonder if there's an ulterior motive. I'll get to that here in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Things worse for me. Sometimes I'd rather die. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I was trying to get Susan Due to come on the show with us. I had her on the air before for many years. She's a great writer. She's now over at the Star Tribune. Amazing coverage during protests and stuff like that. A huge fan, and she's getting married. So big congratulations to her there. Unfortunately, she is, as you'll understand, she was actually busy today with a court case, so I wasn't able to get there. But I want to read this here because there is a lot of red flags going off for me on this case. I'll start reading it and I'll get to a break here in a second. But the city of Minneapolis and the Minnesota Department of Human Rights will appear in Hennepin County Court today to urge the judge to approve an agreement describing a sweeping slate of police reforms. If Judge Karen Janish issues a consent decree approving the 144-page agreement, and I guess I should, one thing I should do here is I should really pull up here and see if there's been a ruling on this. Oh, it is actually... it is going to be approved here. The court has approved this deal. This is updated here 8 minutes ago. So I'll read off this there. The Hennepin County judge on Thursday agreed to issue a court order approving the settlement between the city of Minneapolis and the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, setting in motion a sweeping slate of police reforms the city is now legally required to implement. Not exactly. You'll understand in a second. Judge Karen Janish agreed from the bench to issue an order approving the 144-page agreement after officials from the city and the Human Rights Department urged her to do so. Minneapolis must now move forward with changes that it negotiated with MDHR over several months, according to MDHR spokesperson Taylor Putz. This comes after we spent months with the city negotiating, engaging with, and hearing from communities, members, and police officers, and bringing their ideas right to the negotiating table, said Putz. MDHR charged the city last spring with a pattern of discriminatory policing for over a decade preceding the murder of George Floyd in 2020. I got news for you. It was a long time before a decade. The state and city then came together to negotiate a settlement agreement, which was finalized by the city and MDHR in March. The agreement seeks to rectify the root causes of police misconduct by restricting aggressive tactics, bolstering police accountability systems, and supporting officer wellness. Not exactly. The state engaged many community members prior to the creation of the settlement agreement and families of individuals killed by police officers. We want the city to be successful. We want the police department to be successful. But as the city and MDHR neared court approval of the settlement's agreement, community groups asked the judge not to accept the document without amending details they viewed as impediments to real reform. Also concerned at the hearing were the concerns of police watchdog communities united against police brutality and government accountability groups, Minnesota Coalition of Government Information, and the Transparency Institute, which filed amicus briefs weighing in with their analysis of the agreement. CUAPB raised the bulk of the proposed consent decree, but sounded an alarm on select causes that ostensibly permit the police union contract to supersede promises of reforms. So basically, there are clauses in here that allow the police union's contract to override any reforms that have been negotiated. Wow, that's stupid. Jeez. These include statements that police disciplinary decisions will be documented and reported only in a way consistent with collective bargaining agreements, and that nothing in this agreement will be interpreted as obligating the city or any unions to violate and or waive the rights of obligations under the terms of the collective bargaining agreements. Now, I will get to the rest of this story, plus a lot more with this, because once again, the problem here is through far-right Republican politics, the police union in Minneapolis has created a contract that allows them to violently treat the people of Minneapolis. And there's never any accountability, at least no accountability within years of the violations. I'll tell you what, when I come back, I'm going to remind everyone first and foremost of the Stallings case, because holy God, and the complete lack of any interest by that police department into doing the right damn thing, even when they knew that they were on the wrong side of it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. So once again, here you have the Minnesota Department of Human Rights coming on out and finding all these violations that the city has done. And one of the things I have been very clear about is that the reason why the Minneapolis Police Department does this is because they've been enabled to do this, that there is no accountability for the Minneapolis Police Department. The Stallings case, in the days after George Floyd was killed, they went on a hunting expedition in the city. They went in unmarked vehicles, did not identify themselves, rolled up on Stallings, opened fire on him without any warning. Stallings, thinking he was being attacked by white supremacists, basically grabs a legally owned weapon, fires at the ground to try to scare them off. That's when they identified themselves as police. They'd already hit him with a round, proceeded to jump on him and beat him in the streets of the city of Minneapolis. Then, on top of that, with other god-awful things that were going on that evening as well, they basically, even though they knew their narrative on this trial, on his charges, were wrong, they still pushed and got Freeman to basically charge him, and up until the end were basically of the argument that was saying that, you know, yeah, you better take this charge. We're going to lock you away for 100 years. We got to take 8 years. And he said no, and they found him not guilty. And the reason why is that the body cam tapes basically contradicted every damn thing those lying sons of bees in the police department were saying. They were lying. They knew it. They were trying to cover their butts. And even with Arredondo, the great police chief who was supposed to be a reformer, he knew that was in there. He knew what was in those tapes. And he still didn't do anything. And it wasn't until the defense attorney that got Stallings off the hook basically said, I want to release these tapes. And they're like, oh, you can't release them now. They're sensitive material. And he said, I'm releasing them. And that's when all of a sudden, then, and only then, did we get serious Arredondo out there going, I'm really disappointed in what our officers did. We're going to look into it. And then years later, they still hadn't gotten rid of the police officers there. And the reason why is because the police union contract basically says what they did was completely okay. I want to remind you, Bob Kroll was insisting that Derek Chauvin be given his job back when he was the head of the police union. The union contract is the problem. And we can talk about the fact that the city hasn't negotiated with this with any level of intelligence. They've been emboldened by Republicans who basically have pushed to, because they want, the Republicans want Minneapolis police cops to come out to their rural districts and say, we're keeping those people in line to help out rural white Republicans in white districts. So they'll basically, the Republicans would allow the police union to do anything they want. They've been emboldened. This, the police union contract is the problem. The police union contract is the problem. And we said this when they had the referendum, that, you know, the reality is that you've got to figure out a way to start over with the police union contract. And that referendum, which they fought really hard to kill, was part of it. But the reality is that you need to have a brand new start. And I am pro-union. I am. But that police union contract is obnoxious in how it allows people to basically break the police officers to be the meanest gang in the city. And so when you're looking at this and they say to you, CUAPB praised the bulk of the proposed dissent critique, but sounded the alarm on select clauses that basically permit the police union contract to supersede promises of reforms. So the police union does not have to reform. They don't have to hold their officers accountable. They don't have to clean up their damn act. They don't have to do anything. This is a bad deal. Nothing in this agreement will be interpreted as obligating to the city or any unions to violate and or waive the rights of obligations under the terms of collective bargaining. That means cops can sidestep anything in this consent decree by putting in their union contract, CUAPB volunteer Andrew Kloos said attendees at a community review of the settlement agreement last month. MNCOGI also asked the court not to approve the settlement agreement as written for fear the document would interfere with the State Data Practices Act. The nonprofit is suing the city for information on the coaching of police officers for sustained incidents of misconduct, a soft or personal action that falls short of the official discipline, which is subject to public disclosure. And from what we've seen, and we saw with the DOJ's report, and I'll get back to that in a second, is that this coaching doesn't really even freaking seem to be happening. So yeah, we're taking care of it in-house. In-house basically means nothing. Nothing. The city dismissed the community group's concerns in a written response, saying the settlement's agreements must conform with state laws, including the Data Practices Act and Public Employment Labor Relations Act. If there are changes in those laws, the settlement agreement would have to be flexibility to adjust as needed, said City Attorney Kristen Anderson. MDHR lawyers agreed. The city also had police department leadership in our negotiating team and consulted, well, of course they did, with affected departments to ensure the terms that we were agreeing to were not only reform-minded but also practical. Janish, the judge, concluded the hearing by stating her intention is to issue the order determining the final consent decree between the city and the Minnesota Department of Human Rights without changes per the party's joint request. This is a huge framework. There's going to be a lot of work that the city is going to need to do in the future. But they don't have to if the police can opt out of all the forms. If they don't have to do the reforms, if they can say, well, the union says we don't have to stop clocking people in the noggin. If they write that in the union contract, well, I guess they have the right to do that. So, an independent evaluator will next be appointed to ensure the city enforces the agreement. There's nothing to enforce here. All the police union is going to have to say is, yeah, that day we went out there and just started clubbing people in the parking lot of a gas station. You know, our contract basically says, well, we can do that. And even if they did cross the line, that we're going to just do some coaching. And we're not going to tell you what the coaching is because we don't have to show you anything because the union contract says it's not. I'm paraphrasing as an example, but that's a pretty damn freaking close to reality goddamn example, isn't it? Here's where I am mightily concerned. If you read the DOJ report, and you can go to the blog, Progressive Citizen X, Type in Progressive Citizens Next in a search screen, and you can type in, you can find the blog. I wrote and posted 40-some excerpts from the DOJ report that was released about the back in June about the report they did and the just unconscionable, disgusting behavior by the Minneapolis Police Department. And this is, I'll say the thing I've said before many times, this is not against the St. Paul Police Department, the Bloomington Police Department, Duluth Police Department, the Chaska Police Department, the Elk River Police Department, the Matamidi Police Department, the Invergrove Heights Police Department, nothing against any of those, any police departments, because those police departments, sure, they might have a problem or two, but nothing like what's been going on in Minneapolis. Minneapolis is unbelievable. And that DOJ report really pointed out to some insanely ugly behavior by the Minneapolis Police Department. Here's where I'm concerned. There seems to be this element within the city that wants to force this agreement with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights to be the one that's enforced ahead of any agreement that's forced upon the police department and the city of Minneapolis from the DOJ. And it almost feels like the entire point of this agreement between this decree between the Minnesota Department of Human Rights and the city of Minneapolis is to cut off the ability of the DOJ to do what really needs to be done. And that's rewrite a big portion of that contract with the police union that basically lays out very distinctly what behavior is and is not allowed. And it almost feels like, I'm not saying this is, but it almost feels like this decree was pushed through in an attempt to basically say, well, hey, federal courts, you can't enforce this because we already have this agreement and we're going to put it in place. An agreement which, once again, doesn't really seem to have any enforcement whatsoever because the police union can basically say, well, that goes against our contract, so we're not going to clean up our act. It almost feels like there's a lot of people right now trying to stave off real reform potentially from the Department of Justice by basically saying, well, we already have this decree with the city of Minneapolis and the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, so that supersedes the DOJ report. Now, the DOJ, very quickly, if I remember correctly, very quickly stated, oh, no, we are going to supersede anything. We're the federal government. We've called us in. We're going to change things. I don't know how much they're going to be able to change the police union, but I think that they're going to have more ability to put in some language changes that are going to have to be enforced. But is this what this is all about? And I'm asking this question. Is this what this is all about? Is this entire agreement between the city of Minneapolis and the police department in Minneapolis and the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, is it a red herring? Is it a facade? Is it just basically a last-ditch attempt by the city of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Police Department to really pretend that they're putting in changes, but not really putting in any changes, and trying to get a judge to sign off on it so that they can basically try to go back into federal court and say, we already have this agreement in place. You can't force us to change anything else. Because that's what it kind of feels like it is. You can tell me if you think I'm completely wrong, but that's what it feels like it is. It feels like this whole thing is basically, well, we got to do something or else the DOJ is really going to come in and clean house. Well, let's see if we can get the Minnesota Department of Human Rights to give us a sweetheart deal, which it sounds like this is, where, you know, I mean, if you basically, I said this when we had the referendum, that if you vote against the referendum, that's fine, but unless you basically tear down that Minneapolis Police Department to the core, outside of the DOJ, I don't know how you're going to be able to fix the police union. And here we are. Because once again, it is, you know, looking at what the community groups are saying here, they praise the bulk of the proposal consent agree, but sounded the alarm at select clauses that ostensibly permit the police union contract to supersede promises of reforms. These include statements that the police disciplinary decisions will be documented and reported only in a way consistent with any collective bargaining agreements, and that nothing in this agreement will be interpreted as obligating the city or any unions to violate and or waive any rights or obligations on the terms of the collective bargaining agreements. So as long as the collective bargaining agreement says you can crack open skulls in the streets, which kind of feels like it is where it's at, because there is no accountability whatsoever right now. What change is going to happen here? And you've already seen, we've already seen that there is an element within the Minneapolis Police Department that doesn't even want O'Hara there. And one of the reasons why O'Hara was brought in is he's already had to deal with a police department that has had to have some major reforms in it. And there already seems to be attack pieces on him trying to get him out of that position. Everything right now, I look in this story, and maybe I am wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Holy God. But everything I am seeing out of this story seems to be an attempt to figure out some way to continue to allow the Minneapolis Police Department to operate under the same pretenses they've been doing for a long time, with zero accountability and zero reform. And it seems like this whole thing with the Department of Human Rights, it seems like it's the whole point is to basically try to stem off the Department of Justice coming in and really cleaning house, as it should be done in the Minneapolis Police Department. I don't know. I don't know what you do here. I mean, my hope is that the DOJ is going to come on in here and say, no. We've made the determinations that this is where things need to go, and we need to rewrite the union law, the rules that basically don't do this. But it's going to be interesting. Watch the city of Minneapolis. Watch Mayor Fry. Watch the city council. Watch the people that are benefiting here. Watch when they sit there and they say, no, we can't have the DOJ reforms. We've got this already in place. Ask yourself, if you really are reform-minded and the DOJ is really willing to take the lead on this, why are you basically trying to stop them? And maybe it is time for us to revisit another referendum from the city where we basically tear down the police department and rebuild it. And it, by doing so, we basically negate the current union contract and we start afresh. My guess is going to be is there's going to be a lot of police officers that if they don't have the ability to run the Minneapolis Police Department like they've been able to run it for a long time, are all of a sudden going to claim they got PTSD and run away. At least the way I'm seeing it, because this seems like this whole thing with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights seems like a whole big pile of nothing at this point, and a whole big pile of nothing. And that's incredibly disappointing. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. This breaking news, the divided U.S. House voted on Thursday to overturn a Pentagon policy guaranteeing abortion access to service members regardless of where they're stationed, imperiling passage of the annual defense bill as right-wing lawmakers rallied Republicans around the drive to load the measure with conservative policy dictates. The vote was 221 to 213, which is going to tell me that right now, Kistner, Stauber, Fischbach, and Emmer all voted to basically strip away military rights to get an abortion. Now, there's two points to this. I think that, you know, the fact that they are willing to torpedo the defense spending bill with this measure, because it's not going to get passed. There's no way in the world the Senate's going to pass it. And I guarantee you Biden's not going to pass it. And if that's your vote total is 221 to 213, I guarantee you you're not going to be able to overturn it on a veto vote. So, you know, between this and Tommy Tuberville and his hold on all the military promotions, I think we can get to the point where the Republican Party is not pro-military. They are not. They are basically, their social agenda supersedes their support the troops crap. They've never supported the troops. They've used the troops as a prop. And they don't give a rat's caboose about the troops. They just do not. And now they're basically not even trying to hide it anymore. Because, yeah, It's women. If abortion is legal in some states of the United States, a woman that comes from Minnesota who enlists in the military, who is stationed at, say, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, or Fort Gordon, Georgia, should be able to get an abortion because they came from Minnesota and they're in the military and that it's representative. It shouldn't be, you're subjected to the rules of our state now, military people. But on the other side of this, let's make sure we understand. As I mentioned, Kistner and Stauber and Emmer and Fischbach, that these are the state Republicans. And I guarantee you, next year, a lot of House members are running around the state saying, you know, there's a lot of people saying that we're going to try to overturn the abortion laws of the state. Nothing could be further from the truth. And they're going to be saying this because they know that if, once again, abortion's on the ballot, that they're going to lose. But we have now a fairly large red flag that clearly the four Republican House members just voted to stop people from being able to have access to the abortions. So, women, you can serve in the military, but you can't make your own decisions as far as health care. That is their basic new standard. You can't trust these guys. You can't trust these guys. I talked about Matt Dean earlier this hour, and you know, yes, he's no longer serving the House, but, you know, very clearly saying, you know, giving the strong implication that if the Republicans get back in charge, they're going to make marijuana illegal again. And I'm sure that they are going, oh, where do you get that loon ball idea? They're not really hiding it. They're not really hiding it. I was watching Blue Stem Prairie, and she has a story out there about in South Dakota where the Sioux Falls Ledger, is it the Sioux Falls Ledger, basically documents all the hate bills that have been passed year by year by year by the South Dakota legislature, because that's what they're trying to do. And if the Republicans get back in charge in this state, guess what they're going to do? They're going to try to make abortion illegal. They're going to go out there and going to try to make marijuana illegal. They're going to try to get rid of the you know, free paid sick time. They're going to make you know basically get rid of free school lunches. They're going to try to undo everything that was done in this state. And so you can no longer, if you are a DFLer, if you are a Democrat in Minnesota, you can no longer sit there and look and pat yourself on the back and say, we got it done, because they will quickly undo it. We supposedly learned our lesson after in 2008, the Democrats took charge, we passed the Affordable Care Act, and then nobody felt like you had to show up in frickin' 2010. And that has created the mess that we are in today. So no, there is no taking off 2024. There is no time taken off. These people are very clear about what their agenda is, and their agenda is very simple. That they are going to take away your rights to make your own decision as a woman on your health care, that they're going to pass laws that discriminate against transgender people in the LGBTQIA community, that they're going to make marijuana illegal again. They're going to do everything in their power. So, not because I'm making it up, but because we just had four Republican House members in this state vote to take away women's right on health care. The signs are all there. Native Roots Radio, I'm awake. That's coming up next. We are back tomorrow. Have a good one. Till then, see ya.